Richard Dennis joined us on Sports Byline. We're talking about his book, which I hope everybody will check out. It's called Blood, Sweat, and Bears, Putting a Dent in the Game I Love. In the book, you mentioned the guy that found me was a guy by the name of Bill Tobin. Tell me about it.
Well, Bill was, came to watch a look at another quarterback, somebody, I forget who he was playing. And from what Bill told me, he looked and he saw me and he's like, oh, you know, what a fast kid. And, you know, and maybe he saw that one could rush the passer. And that's kind of, you know, how things started there. I really didn't know, you know, at that time, the 49ers, 49ers, the Cowboys, and the Raiders was, you know, all over me. So I thought I was going to go to one of those three teams.
And you get picked in the eighth round by the Chicago Bears. Did you have any idea at all that the Bears were interested in you?
You know, it didn't matter to me. And that's what I tell kids today. A lot of kids, oh, you know, I lost all this money. I'm like, whatever money you're getting is more than what you got in your pocket today. You know, so you haven't lost any money. Then you're going in with a bitter, you know, taste and all appreciated to what's to come. And, it didn't matter to me. You know, when I heard it was Chicago Bears, all I knew about was Walter Payton and Alan Page a little bit there, you know, and, you know, that was still their plan or played at some point. And, I remember getting there and looking and I saw Big Keith Van Horn, and I looked up at him and I'm like, oh my God, you know, this might not be here for me. But, you know, when you put your helmet on, you put your gear on, you put your hand down, and you kind of forget about all those things, you know, it's back to football.
You know, you went to Tennessee State, and I'm going to make this statement, and tell me if you think I'm wrong about this, but I think one of the great discriminations in sports, and particularly in the NFL, has nothing to do with racial. It has to do with the label that is put on athletes to the school that they went to, the competition they may have played in college, and all of that transfers is to where they, you know, draft you or what your 40 time is and everything. The fact that you went to Tennessee State, you've been very candid about the fact that, you know, the National Football League didn't give you the kind of respect even though you had a great college career.
Well, you know, I lost five games in 5 years, you know. And, you know, recently I made some comments about, you know, Coach Dick, you know, we played 64 games in 4 years there, and we lost 10 games, and we only won one Super Bowl, you know, and we just couldn't manage the quarterback position greatly. But, you know, in college, we had a great quarterback, you know, we had a quarterback that could make things happen. And the game is played between the lines, you know, but yet, you know, again, the book is all about, you know, how people perspective and see things, marketability, you know, the team's looking to market a few guys. They did not draft me in a position to market me to make sure I'm the type of guy for their brand. Now, when you come in and you make them look like a situation where, you know, you look like a blue chipper, and by the way, you know, you're a non-draftee, you know, it makes the system look like, you know, they didn't know what they were doing. They got lucky, you know, and nobody wants to say they're lucky. But then again, you should just appreciate, hey, if you found $1 million, you should have found $1 million, you're happy about it. Why is it not like that sometime when you get players that you didn't pick accordingly?
Let me go to 1984, which was your second year in the National Football League. It was a challenging one for you, and there was a meeting that you were called up to by Mike McCaskey and also Mike Ditka. Tell me about that meeting.
Well, you know, at this time, they started me in about the seventh game in the season, and I got on a roll. You know, I didn't have a one sack. I ended up right about 17 sacks that year. So, you know, I got 16 sacks in about 10 games there. But I was clicking and really doing well. So, you know, I get called up in this meeting and I thought that, you know, maybe they didn't have to talk to me about, giving me a contract or booping my money up or something. And And Mike McCaffrey said, no, you know, we have an issue here. We have someone that said they'd seen me out at some place selling cocaine. I'm like, you got to be kidding. I mean, I can't say the words what I said on your air. But, you know, I said, you know, I'm up and out of here, you know. You're wasting my time here. I said, you know, my mother didn't raise me up to be that way. And I said, no. So he stopped me from walking out. And I said, well, you know, tell me who this person is. Well, it's an anonymous caller. I'm like, hold on, somebody's calling you. Because you don't know. I work for you, and you're getting this call. I said, you know, this is a bunch of crap. I'm out of here. And I kind of left it at that, and you come in there, you got your general manager, your president of the company, your head coach, your trainer. Like, what is, you know, so I basically left, and I called the union and tried to see what and what, you know, what I could do, what wasn't right. And, you know, this went on for about 3-4 weeks or so. And, you know, so I went back to the paperwork. Basically, you know, the NFL, in your agreement, they have a right to test you anytime you want to. They can say you come to work late a couple times or you look tired or your eyes look red. You know, so basically, at the end of the day, I looked at it and said, you know, all your rights are gone here. You know, after I've asked and consulted with so many people and I'm looking at it, I'm like, this is, I'm up a creek with nothing to paddle with. So, you know, so I have to give them what they're asking for. But after I left there, and I went to some place close to my house, at a bar, have a beer or something, and this guy walks up to me, touches me, and he shakes my hand. And when he shakes my hand, you know, and, you know, it's normal when you shake people's hand, but when you feel something in that hand, and it's naturally, you know, and I looked up and I see what's in my hand, and I tell this guy, I say, you know, this guy got a little bottle of cocaine in his hand. I said, look, dude, when I turn back around, if I see you, I'm going to whoop your tail all over this place. You got 5 seconds. He grabbed it back out of my hand. I turned around, 5 seconds, turned back around. I couldn't find him anywhere. You know, I said, you know, either what a coincidence or how did all this just come about? You know what I mean? That never happened before in my life. And, you know, I can't say what they did or whatever, but, you know, the point of coming out of a meeting like that and having that face you right away, you know, it's kind of freaky.
The thing that you say in the book about it is that one of the most disturbing experiences in my life occurred early in my NFL career when some members of the Chicago Bears organization questioned whether I was selling and using cocaine in the early 1980s. It's bad enough when fans and media try to attack you, but when your own employer questions your character and integrity, that really hurts me to the soul, even to this day. Have you been able to move beyond that yet?
I've definitely been, we're past that. But, you know, the point of that is that, you know, when you do, again, this is for other young men, young women, people, you know, employed, working, and you give a person all what you got, all what you're all about. And, you know, that year, you know, I led the league in sacks, and next year come back, did it again. You know, didn't get promoted for anything. You know, I didn't get defensive player of the year, didn't get defensive lineman of the year. I mean, when you do that 2 years in a row, within your first 3 years in the league, and you got this other drug matter, I mean, what is it? I mean, you're standing there saying what? You know what I mean? It's, what can you do? You led the league a couple times, and your team is winning, and now you're still not accepted, you know, so... What you have to say as an individual is, you know, I have to do what's best for me right now. I can sit out here and I can scream and say a lot of things. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, in your Hall of Fame, I want to go back to the Hall of Fame speech for just a second.
Yeah.
You say the guy who I tried to pattern myself on was the late, great Walter Payton. Walter was the best of all. Tell me a little bit about your relationship with him and what was it about him that you respected?
Well, I respect the way he went to work, you know, and when he came to work, you know. obviously, you know, he got up in ages, and, you know, you don't need to run. You don't have, you need to do some things, but he was always in shape and always prepared. When we used to come together, he would always say, you know, he'd put his hand on the hips or heads, and he would say, you know, do what I do, don't do what I say. You know, if he tells you head and you put your hands on head, that's not what he's saying. When he moves his hand, you move your hand. It's all about concentration. You know, it's just the moment where a team come together and focus on, you know, the common goal. You know, but watching him go to work, you know, you've been watching as a kid for, you know, a teenager for some time, and to be there, and here's a guy that, you know, came from a black school, and here I'm looking, okay, here, I mean, he's from, you know, Mississippi, you know, Jackson, Mississippi, played there, first round pick. I thought, well, maybe not. So, you know, but I'm from a small school. Maybe I need to do, or I need to come up the ranks the way he came up the ranks. And you start patting yourself to do those things, to be accepted, but yet to give appreciation to the people also, enjoyment of what you're offering them and what you're giving them with your ability. So it's two things going there. It's an inside deal and it's an outside deal. The outside is entertaining the people. The inside is, again, accepted from the people that you work for and the people that work with you.
How would you characterize your relationship with Mike Ditka?
I don't have one, pretty much. I don't have.
I mean, what was it like Mike, when you were playing for him?
You know, Mike. Mike did some. I think a team could be like his coach. I mean, if he's wild and crazy, the team could be wild and crazy also. You know, I think Mike was pretty much a loose cannon when he was going about things. And you know, the year before I got there, you know, these guys put a petition together. They wanted Buddy to be the head coach. The Papa Howard went and signed Mike and told Buddy he could be there as long as he liked. So that's the situation that Dicker can't cut Buddy. He can't release him. You know, Buddy could be there still coaching. All we know, as long as he doesn't mind being a defense coordinator. You know, we had two guys working there, you know, and Dickie said you weren't going to do something, and Buddy said you would. So, you know, and Mike would be upset because of what Buddy is doing. So you're not a part of Mike because of what Buddy's doing. So you got a hatred there. And I don't know if that came through that situation. I'm like, what did I do? All I did was, you know, I didn't have to come here. Y'all brought me here. You know, and you know, maybe he thought small school, I can break this kid or what. I don't know. Maybe he didn't know how to motivate one, you know. But coming from a guy, the late Joe Gilliam Sr., who sent over 140-some guys to the pros, he has to be probably one of the coaches that sent some of the most, you know, so many players to him and Eddie Robinson for so many years. You know, it's amazing what he did as an individual of training young men about life through sports.
We only have a minute left, Richard, but I wonder what you think your legacy is as far as a football player.
Well, as far as a football player, you know, it's about, you know, I have to be appreciative for people who turn the television on and who gave me the time to entertain them on Sunday. That's what I'm appreciative to. As another athlete, and when you start talking bragging rights, you know, you have to say that, you know, I'm one of the best, you know. And God made a lot of us better than others. Not many of us get a chance to find out what we're great at, and not many of us get a chance to make a living off of it also. But yet, sports is a factor of life, you know. You're going to get knocked down. You got to get up. You know, you're going to deal with a couple things. You're going to deal with a whole bunch of things. Some things are going to run by you. Some are going to run over you. But the point of it is you learn how to compete and how to deal with them.
Richard, I want to thank you very much for sharing your life and sharing your football story as well with us. And I urge people to check out this book. It's called Blood, Sweat, and Bears, Putting a Dent in the Game I Love. Richard, come back and join us anytime here on Sports Byline.
I appreciate that, and it's a good book for, you know, for people just to to take a grab of, and it can help you through some things. It helps you see some things that if you got God in your life and you're patient and you believe in yourself, then you can conquer anything you want.
Richard Dent with us, the Hall of Fame defensive end with the Chicago Bears for so many years. We continue on Sports Byline.